All right, to the business at hand. Tonight we have a great guest speaker. It's been a while since he's been with us. I think it was about 3 years ago. Bernard came down the street to Abyssinia. He brought with him at that time the new station manager of WBAI, Brother Don Rojas. Not just a station manager, but a great revolutionary. I don't know how many of you know it, but Don Rojas was a member of the government of Maurice Bishop when the Revolutionary New Jewel movement was in power before it was overthrown by the Reagan administration. Unfortunately, due to illness, Don Rojas had to step down. But Bernard White is still there. And we're glad to see Bernard with us tonight. I remember when the coup happened at WBAI, and for a while people were very despondent. They were ready to give up. Then one morning, I believe it was on Martin Luther King's birthday, January 15th, I turned on my radio and I heard somebody say, "Good morning." And Bernard and Amy and the whole crew were back. And I'm also proud to say tonight that Bernard's talk is going to be covered by WBAI. And Fred is here tonight from WBAI, one of our members who lives up there in Maplewood where they are on fire. So without further delay, let us welcome in the strongest possible way Bernard White from WBAI Radio. Power to the people. Bernard, I just want to present you with a few posters. We got a WBAI poster campaign. I want you to take some of these back to the station. I hope they'll go up and around the station, let people know how much the People's Organization for Progress loves WBAI. And also want to give you a size 3X. POP, this is what he asked for. POP t-shirt, honorary member of People's Organization for Progress.
Well, thank you very much. When he told me he was going to give me a t-shirt, I said, "I hope you got enough X's." Well, I'm very honored to be here this evening and always honored to talk to the people, the People's Organization for Progress. Larry Hamm would call me in the morning and say, "Bernard, I said, "Hold on a minute, I'll put you on." He knew that all he had to do was have something to say, and we would make sure that he got it. And there's a good reason for that. Because I think that you folks who are out here doing struggling, is what this is all about. You know, it's what life is all about, trying to confront wrong where you see it and make sure that, you know, people know about this wrong and that there is some opposition to it. You, for me, are the conscience of what takes place in this area. That not only do you go out, see, because many organizations, they go out when things happen, and then a couple of weeks later, they're back to watching HBO. But you folks, you know, these dates are indelibly etched in your rhythm of struggle. And you eventually get back to that on its anniversary and make sure that people do not forget some of the wrongs that have been done to the folks in this community. So I'm not just saying that. I really appreciate the things that you do. And one of the reasons why I always would just let Larry come on and talk about what you're doing is because I hope that it would be duplicated by people who'd hear it in other places. Because there are a lot of places where injustice is going on, and people aren't really doing anything about it. And, you know, I was watching your faces when folks would mention where you had gone and what you had done, and I could see the pride and the good feeling that you get from struggling. And there's a good feeling that you get from struggling and knowing that you did not just lay down and let things happen. So I appreciate that. First of all, I want to say hello to Dr. Lewison. Is that right? and to the dog. He was an integral part of our struggle during the coup period. I got to meet them both, and that's still the most well-behaved dog I've ever met. So tonight, there are a whole lot of things I want to talk to you about. I don't know, how many of you are familiar with this thing that we call the coup? Okay, there are some hands down. I'll talk a little bit about that, and I'll try and bring you up to date on just what's happening right now, and maybe we can talk about the role that WBAI has played. First of all, I've been at WBAI off and on since 1980. You know, I came there as a volunteer, and I was unemployed at the time. So I used my stipend to just get involved in something that I always wanted to do. And I didn't realize how long I wanted to do it until I met some people who I knew in junior high school. And they would say, well, what you doing now? I said, well, you know, I'm doing some working at a radio station. Hey, you always wanted to do that. I didn't know it had gone back that far, but at one point I wanted to be Jocko. I don't know if you're familiar with Jocko. He was an old DJ that used to come on. He was one of the first rappers that I met. Hickory Dickory Dock. Okay. But I began to realize as we moved into the 60s that there was more important things to do than to play music. I used to go to a lot of different demonstrations around. We would be protesting some injustice that we saw. And I would find that when I got home to look at it on the television, that it was reported totally differently. Or when I listened to it on the radio, I was trying to figure out, well, where were they? Because that's not what happened where I was. I'm going to have to take this off, okay?
Go ahead, man.
Maybe I'll put my t-shirt on. No.
Put your t-shirt on. You'd be hot again if you put that on.
Thank you. So, it's because what they were reporting in no way resembled what I had experienced out in the street. And generally, it was, if there was any problem that took place, it was the police who initiated it. And yet they would always talk about how the demonstrators were the ones who were being unruly and initiated violence. But it wasn't that way. So I felt that, well, maybe the people who were doing the reporting didn't really know what they were doing. And when they got back, they just, you know, made a mistake and did the wrong story. But then I realized that they knew very well what they were doing, and they were purposely filing the police's version of what was taking place. And I started out at WWRL back in 1978 doing a report for the National Black Human Rights Coalition. I used to come on Sunday just before Bob Law, she's a minister right now. What's her name? She'll never talk about things that you can't remember. But well, Diane Lacey Winley, she was doing a program there. And so she allowed me to come on and do a reprogram. And that's when I got a start in radio. And then it became very addictive. And, you know, that's just all I could think about. All I wanted to do was do radio programs and try and be as creative as possible. I originally wanted to do music, but then I realized that there's a way of doing both, that you can take the music and also do the public affairs programming. And that was pretty much my approach, how to get people, pull them in with the music, get the music to go along with what it is that you were saying. Because there's a lot of music out there that just doesn't get played, that is very relevant, very strong, and it just doesn't get played. So that's what I wanted to do, find that music and get it played, get it out there to the public, along with the correct information. So, like I said, I was at WBAI just about every day for a year, trying to learn as much as I could about radio, talking to as many different people as I could about radio. The person who brought me in was someone who I have just the utmost respect for. I miss him. And think I have his picture behind me. I think about him just about every day. And that's Samori Marksman, who was one of the one of the smartest guys that I've met in quite some time, and appreciated by people around the world. And WBAI is a very, very important place. It is the last place where there is the opportunity to tell the truth and not have to worry about somebody coming to you and saying, no, you can't say this, you can't say that. There are instances where I wish we could tell people to shut up because, they have a tendency to just get very personal. But still, they have the opportunity to research a story and present it without us worrying about some corporation withdrawing their account and affecting our bottom line. So what WBAI has done for me personally, you mentioned Maurice Bishop. Well, I met Maurice Bishop. In fact, I remember drinking a beer with him sitting in the government house in Grenada. I got the opportunity to meet some really good people, Ozzie Davis, Ruby Dee, Gil Noble, John Hendrick Clark, Ivan Van Sertima, and the list just goes on and on. Some of the folks, I sat at their feet and listened to what they had to say. Others, I wound up sitting right next to them, and we had really, really good conversations. So WBAI, for me, was a very unique place because it was the first place that I had ever been where there was a gathering of black men who were really serious and really struggling and really talking about some very important things. It wasn't just one, but they're Elambe Brad. And, when you're around them, you wind up taking away a lot of information. And I was there trying to just get it all, just be a sponge for it. And my role at WBAI, I always felt, was not being the spokesperson, but being a conduit for the information, to allow the information to come through and get to the people. Around my friends, I have a lot of opinions, but generally on the air, I just allow other folks to tell their story. Because we don't get an opportunity to tell our story in the manner that we want to tell it. Generally, when we do, it's been fashioned by other considerations. We need to be able to tell our story unfettered by other considerations. So, what happened at WBAI? I'm jumping through a lot of this. What happened at WBAI, that period that we call the coup, was that things, if you don't keep your eye on things, people understand the value of them, and they will come in and try and take them from you. So that's what happened at BAI. Most of us were so busy doing programs that we weren't paying attention to the people in the higher places who were making decisions. And many of the decisions that they made ran counter to what WBAI and what Pacifica is all about. And by the time we finally looked up and saw what was happening, they had taken over the station, they had dissolved the local body, the local advisory board, and they were making all the decisions without any input from the people from the bottom. On December 21st, December 22nd. First of all, leading up to that, I had been telling people in the community that, there's some strange things happening here. And there was a woman that was there who was doing some very strange things. But she was very well respected by a lot of people. A very intelligent woman, very articulate woman, maybe not so intelligent, but very articulate. And it was like, it was like people just couldn't believe that this person that they trust, cognitive dissonance.
Well.
They could not believe that this person that they trusted, that they invested so much trust in, could be fallible and wind up making personal decisions for their own benefit, putting their own benefit above the radio station. And that took a long time. When people heard what had happened, that I was fired, that one of my colleagues was fired, And, you know, we would no longer be on. They came in the middle of the night and changed the locks that and locked us out of the radio station, told me that if I came back to the radio station, that they would have me arrested. In the meantime, I got thousands of dollars of music inside. They wouldn't let me come in and get it. And the kind of abuse that the listeners took following that slowly made them recognize that this was not a good thing. And the listeners began to organize and apply pressure and withdraw their money just to make sure that this could not go on. You know, there's so many of the people who we get projected in the news media that are supposed to represent our communities, you know, they don't really represent our communities. These are media-made people. These are people that have pretty much been given to us. And they don't really represent our community. So when folks found someone who they thought really represented the community, they gave them all the support that they could give. So it took a while before people realized that, no, this is not a good thing. First of all, if it was a good thing, it could have happened at 12 noon instead of at 1 in the morning. You know, if you want to fire somebody, you can go right to their office. You have the authority. You say, look, I want you to get all your things. Today is your last day. And if you want to grieve or whatever, you can do that. But right now, you have to leave. And they'll escort you out the building, take your key, and then that's it. But when any time you come in the middle of the night to do something, then there's a problem with that. So eventually, the listeners recognized that there was a problem. A few of the staff people, we got together pretty much under the leadership of Juan Gonzalez, who had been a part of the New York City, the Daily News strike. So he was familiar with something called a corporate campaign. So we developed a campaign to harass those people who had taken over the leadership of the Pacifica Foundation until they got out. What they wanted to do was to make Pacifica more corporate, to make it, instead of in the left leaning, to make it move a little further to the right, and also to make it compatible with the desires and wishes of the Democratic Party. And I believe that some of the same money that was behind them turned into Air America, because they were looking for a national network that would be the mouthpiece for the Democratic Party, because the Republican Party had everything else. You know, they had Rush Limbaugh and these other right-wing clowns all over the place. So they wanted to have a counter for that. They're trying to do it with Air America. It's not really working. But I think that's the same money they wanted to do it with WBAI. So we fought back, and there were some lessons to be learned from that, because I couldn't believe... I learned lessons about human nature. That, you know, you don't really know people, and you don't even really know yourself until you've been tested. Well, I remember coming into the building. WBAI used to be on 35th Street and 8th Avenue. And on the weekends, we had to come through the side, to the side of the building in the back, and get the freight elevator and come upstairs. And the place always had rats and stuff in there. And I remember coming around the corner one day, and like down by the elevator over there, there was a rat. Now, there was no place else for the rat to go except by me. And I said, you know, if this rat come over here, I'm going to kick the out of this rat. Well, I started walking to the elevator, and the rat came right at me. My leg wouldn't move. I heard somebody say, ah! You know, a real shriek. I realized that it was me, because nobody else was around. And, you know, I really thought that I was going to be able to handle this. But, you know, when I was really confronted with it, I just froze. So, you know, you never know until you're really confronted with it what you do. Now, I don't know what I'll do next time, I'll probably go back outside. But, you know, people were given, was placed in front of them that, look, if you go along with us, we'll give you, we'll put you in charge. We'll give you a raise. We'll give you an expense account. We give you a vacation, you know, extra vacation. You can take some trips. And it was, I was just surprised at the people who went for that. Some of them I thought were my friends, and they were. But we had, they hadn't been tested, you know, they hadn't been, stuff hadn't been offered to them before. So, you know, you don't really know people until they can go through that. Now, some of them stood up, and, you know, we're still close friends. Some of them stood up and said, no, I'm not, I can't go with this. This is wrong. I'm not going to be a part of it. But then others wound up, you know, going for it. Some of them are still people that we work with today. And, you know, it's just, it can be difficult sometimes because they, some of them still exhibit the same kind of behavior, but we'll talk about that in a minute. So eventually, we applied so much pressure to the folks. There was also several lawsuits, which people who were better prepared took advantage of. Now, what I mean by that is that there were people who were on the outside of WBAI all along, and they were throwing rocks at WBAI. They understood that if they could get involved in the lawsuit, in the settlement, that they could work their way inside of WBAI, and that's what they did. So when the lawsuit was settled, there was a new governing structure that brought them inside. The only problem is that they brought their rocks inside with them too, and they just kept throwing them at people while they were there. So the first couple of years after the coup, in the post-coup period, many of these folks were, at least at WBAI, they were in the majority, and they made life very difficult for all of us. That's not the case today. Because the person who organized all of this, and I'm going to pass some things out to you that I want you to read, maybe not now, but read when you get home, because there's some real lessons, as I said, there to be learned. Thank you. That one of the people who is the philosopher king of all of this, the one who's doing all of this, is a multimillionaire. And you'll see his name in the material, because I think I got a serious lawsuit. I don't want to call his name. A multimillionaire who feels that, I think that for a modest investment, he could get control of a radio station. And what he has done, and I think you know exactly what I'm talking about. What he has done he has embarked on a campaign of vilification, a very nasty campaign of vilification. So much so that many of the people who he is in league with have had to stand up and say that they separate themselves from that. The local station board, in a couple of meetings ago, disassociated themselves with him. Let me give you an idea of what it is I'm talking about, if I can find it here right quick. You see, the lesson that I've learned, too, is that there are people who will do whatever they can to make sure that a black man is not, doesn't have any power. You know, when I was thinking about coming here, one of the things I didn't want to do was to make it appear that I was talking about me, because I recognize that it's not me, because Samori Marksman went through the same thing. It just wasn't as intense because the people were on the outside then. Now they're on the inside. But it's the same thing over and over. They're going to make sure that a black person doesn't have any power. So this is one of the letters that was written. And I know that many of you have listened to me over the years. Some of you maybe even since the 80s. And you listen to people for a long period of time. If you're paying close attention, you kind of know who they are, what their rhythm is like. And I want you to answer me whether this sounds like me. This was posted on Monday, March 13th at 11:54 p.m. Now, I didn't get to work that day until 1 o'clock. But it says, was anyone a witness or does anyone have knowledge of the latest episode of Bernard White losing it at WBAI? This Monday morning, 3:13:06 at approximately 10 a.m. Oh, don't tell me I don't have the rest. Do you have a whole one over there? Thank you. It's worth waiting for when you hear this. Okay. Was anyone a witness or does anyone have knowledge of the latest episode of Bernard White losing it at WBAI? This morning, 3:13:06 at approximately 10 a.m. and thereafter, according to one eyewitness who had talked and two others who are too terrified to talk but may soon change their minds, Bernard received a piece of information, a very interesting piece that I will not yet reveal, that propelled him out of his chair and into the station hallway, frothing at the mouth, shrieking at the top of his lungs, bellowing crude racist insults clearly directed at Indra Hardart in her office down the hall. Well, her office is right next door to me, and that's the interim station manager. Then, and not for the first time in the past few days, he menaced Indra, towering over her in what must have been a deliberately intimidating confrontation, literally screaming into her face and pumping his fist threateningly back and forth. Shortly thereafter, I was told that Bernard's behavior, and for the same reason, was aped by Errol Maitland, also running through the hallway, pumping his fist in the air in anger, appearing to threaten all in his path. One witness describes coming to the station these days like living in the South Bronx, where rival gangs are shooting each other, and all you can do is keep your head down to keep from getting beaten up, knifed, or shot. He and others fear coming to the station. They claim that Bernard and Errol and others have instituted a reign of terror in which staff members have literally been beaten up on the premises, but actual beatings no longer have to be administered since all evidently have received the message, don't cross Bernard or you will soon be nailed to one. According to two staff members, it was not just little people, but actual management personnel such as Janet Coleman, Kathy Davis, and others who witnessed these and other volcanic and abusive outbursts by Bernard, mostly directed against Indra in order to intimidate her into doing or not doing a particular thing he wanted. But neither Coleman nor Davis nor the little people have agreed to sign affidavits attesting to Bernard's crude racist language and physical intimidation yet. But at some point, staff members who see and know what is going on will have to decide whether to blow the whistle on bullies like Bernard and Errol, even if it means calling the police. It is not fair to leave Indra standing alone in the face of such blatant macho intimidation. She needs some support, both moral and physical, in order to do her job. When are the people at the station going to speak up? Even anonymous postings would help. Even anonymous postings would help. At least they would get the information out, and this would help throw Bernard out. Otherwise, he will continue to terrorize the station and the general manager like a petty despot. One of his own people became upset with him when he wrote this. This was, they felt that it went just too far. And he writes back to her, where were you when Bernard was terrorizing Indra in full view of so many staff people? Not just once, but several times, yelling and cursing at her at the top of his lungs, looming over her and waving his fist ominously in her face, as reported by eyewitnesses. If you were there, you should have been at her side, whacking Bernard with a baseball bat and then calling the police. And it goes on. Many of you will get a copy. But I bring that up because I'm thinking that we are close again to fomenting the kind of dissension amongst the staff. By the way, this is very detailed, and not one thing about it is true. Not one. I mean, I wasn't even at the place. One of the people that he named wasn't even at work that day. There are no witnesses because the event never took place. And this person is very prolific. They send these things out by the thousands. Every month they send them out by the thousands. My landlord came to me to ask me what was going on at WBAI because he had gotten a copy of the email. Somehow he has gotten the emails of people and has begun to send these things out. There is something happening at WBAI right now that is just odious. That there are some individuals who, at one point, they were very well organized and they had a majority of the board. They controlled the majority of the board. Now they're losing power and they're becoming more desperate. And they're putting this information out across the country. I went to a board meeting last weekend. And one of the people from the Washington station just leaned over to me and said, Bernard, you need to wipe that froth from your mouth. Cause you know, I mean, so it's getting all around. And like I said, I know that it's not about me. What it's about is control of WBAI. That the product that we produce is programming. And the people feel that there are some people who feel that we got too much black programming, too much Latino programming, that they want to go back to the way it used to be, when it was primarily just all white producers who talked about whatever they wanted to, and they would invite black people on to their show to talk to them, but that the black folks would not have control of the program. And we can't go back. You know, this is one of the things that we all took pride in at WBAI is its diversity, is the fact that we had Latinos and Asians and Native Americans and women and young folks. And we could always do better in all categories. But that's what we wanted to do, to represent what the people that we were talking to, because that's what we have out in society. They don't like that. They don't want that. They want to go back to a time that they feel was a more intellectual time. And see, this is all a part. This is when you analyze this, when you sit down and read it later on and you analyze it, this is the stereotypical characterization of black men. That there's nothing cerebral going on. That it's all brute force and intimidation. That you can't just, you know, figure out, well, sit down and reason and have a conversation. No, we all have to resort to brute force and intimidation. One of the sad things is that, once again, my colleagues are pretty much sitting on the sideline. There's a small group of people who recognize it and have been standing up. But for the most part, my colleagues have been silent. And, you know, and I keep telling them, hey, look, this is what got us in trouble before. That you can't just sit on the sideline and think that they're just talking about me. You know, because he says that the station is racist, homophobic, sexist, misogynist. I said, when he says this, I'm not the station. He's also talking about you, but they feel that since he's focusing it on me, then that's okay as long as it's not bothering them. So we're at a very serious point at the station, and I think that you have a role to play in this too, that you have to become involved. You know, Lisa Davis, who's at a meeting tonight, is a part of the local station board. But I think you ought to have another representative. First of all, Jersey gives WBAI a lot of money. If you notice, when we're calling off them names, Jersey is always in the house. And so you have, you've made a monetary investment in this thing, and you also have This is in line with what your mission is, to try and right and confront injustice wherever it is. So you have a right to be on the on that station board too. I know it's a little difficult jumping back and forth across the river, but I would hope that you would, and that also the local station board would begin to have meetings over here in Jersey, because that's very necessary too. I mean, it's only fair that we have more meetings over here in Jersey. But there's an election coming up at some point this year. When is that election this year? December? And between now and December, I would like for you, you don't have to believe me, because see, it's so blatant that you'll see it for yourself. I want you to come and check it out for yourself. Come to one or two, maybe you can get a bus or a car or something. Come to one or two of these board meetings and see how people behave, see how they line up. And, I mean, it's really, really nasty. Now, that was just one letter. I got about 15 or 20 letters. He's very prolific. He sends it out. And what it does, as you know, we've been having these fund drives. And with each fund drive, we fall a little short. We try and raise $1 million. We get it up to $900,000. And I believe that as he continues to send these things out, that there are some people who read them and say, why should I send money to this radio station? I mean, this is crazy. Why should I invest in that? And I can't blame him. If I got that and I didn't know any better, I would wonder, well, why should I do that? I believe that these letters are slowly eroding, not totally, but eroding some of our support. For instance, I remember when Clifford Glover was killed. You remember Clifford Glover?
Yes.
Clifford Glover was killed, and me and Omar Wally and Biola, we developed a strategy for trying to get some justice in that case. He was killed by Officer Thomas Shea. And we found out that Gert's department store had brought in these police officers who were supposed to just patrol the Jamaica Avenue business district. But they didn't have anything to do there, so they wound up drifting into South Jamaica, into the community. And early one morning, while Clifford Glover and his father were going to work, he just took a gun out, chased them, blew them away, tried to say that the young boy pulled out a gun, asked him where he got the gun from. His father was 56 years old. He said the father gave him the gun. And then they said, and they shot him, they said, because he pulled, why'd you shoot him? Because he pointed the gun at me. Well, how come the bullet was in his back? Well, once he pointed the gun, he tripped. And when he turned around, I shot him in the back. And he got off. Thomas Shea got off. And not only did he get off, he became a state trooper up in upstate New York. But what we did was we came up with a strategy to affect the Gertz. Not to close them down. We knew we couldn't close them. But we knew we could cut into their profit margin. And if we cut into their profit margin for them, because they're always looking for growth, and if we cut into their profit margin, we would be successful. And we were able to do that. Because people would say, you're not going to close Gertz now. Well, no, we're not. We can't. We're not that strong. But we cut into their profit margin. And then we were able to bring them to the table to go along with us and trying to get Thomas Shea in the court on civil rights violations. And that's what this guy is trying to do. He's trying to cut into our ability to be successful. And the reason why it has happened is because there's not enough people knowledgeable about what's going on and demanding that this kind of thing no longer happens at a radio station that is supposed to be progressive, that is supposed to be against racism. That, you know, there needs to be a demand from the community that they will not support that. That this guy, and then, like I said, do your own research. Don't just listen to me. You check it out for yourself. That this person and people who feel the same way and use the same language don't need to be a part of WBAI or Pacifica. That there are a lot of other radio stations for them. They can go to ABC and NBC and all of those other places where that kind of behavior is welcome. But at WBAI, that's not what we should be about. And what's going to happen is that this also sets up a dynamic with the staff that is not good either. because it creates a lot of friction. People start drawing sides, and you know, then the sides got to prove who's the